You're listening to Let's Get Legal, hosted by John Hansen and powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Today's show is sponsored by attorney Sadie Rose from Vogelzang Law and attorney Millie Palmer from Navigant Law. Now, here's John Hansen and Let's Get Legal.
At 1:12 on a Saturday afternoon across Chicagoland, a busy one at that. We've got all the protests happening. Of course, we have the military parade happening in Washington, D.C. as well. And I also forgot, of course, we've got the Pope celebration happening at Raitt Field on the south side in just a few hours' time. So a busy one, and hope you're having a great Saturday afternoon, everyone, the day before Father's Day as well. We're going to dive in right away here with a new lawyer to the program. Sadie Rose is from Vogelzang Law, a name. Sadie Rose is a new name to our program. Vogelzang is not. But Sadie, welcome to WGN. Thanks for hopping on with us today.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here to talk about this current important issue.
For sure. And we're going to be talking about, is it Depo Provera? Am I saying that correctly?
Yes. Yes, it is Depo Provera.
We're going to talk about that extensively throughout this hour. But I do just want to say hello to you first and just point out that people hear Vogelzang and they immediately think of all the asbestos litigation that you guys do and do it so well. But Sadie, this is not the case we're going to be talking about today. So as we get to know you, tell us a little bit about yourself. Where are you from? How'd you become a lawyer? Were you always interested in being a lawyer?
Yeah, of course. So I was born and raised in a small town in northern Wisconsin, actually. And I currently live in the suburbs of Chicago with my husband, daughter, and dog. I went to University of Wisconsin-Madison for my undergraduate, and then I went to Chicago Kent College of Law for my law school. And in law school, I primarily focused on environmental law. And I would say I didn't, like growing up and everything, I didn't always want to be a lawyer. My dad was a lawyer and I didn't necessarily want to do that until I got to college. And I thought, wait, this is actually the path that I want to go down.
That's awesome.
So I'm happy with my decision with going down this path.
How did you end up at Vogelzang? Is this your first gig, or have you been at a few different firms?
So I actually have been with Vogelzang since law school about 8 years ago. Oh. And then so about 6 years as an attorney, 8 years altogether. I started at the end of my second year in law school. During law school, I primarily focused on environmental law. I was did law clerkships at like the US EPA, Environmental Law and Policy Center, and then also worked at like the Chicago Environmental Law Clinic. I came across Vogelzang for a law clerk position, and I thought it really connected just with my interest in helping people. I know like environmental law and the stuff that Vogelzang isn't always, it's not necessarily, doesn't seem like it's very similar, but it was for me in helping people. So I was interested in environmental law for public health reasons and making sure people are safe from dangers from the environment that might happen. And I thought I was learning about air quality control at the same time. And so that really lined up with asbestos and helping people at Vogelzang.
Oh, I see the connection. Absolutely. Yeah, you just said it right there. The lungs we use to breathe, how much environmental law has been litigated about living near certain plants or how different companies dumping stuff into rivers or into the sky exactly. Impacts quality of life. Like there's a direct connection, I feel like.
Yeah. So definitely. It's like different substantive laws that is ultimately used day to day, but it's very similar in what you're ultimately doing.
So you've done a lot of the asbestos-related litigation in addition to what we're going to talk about today.
So I work a little bit different than my coworkers that have been on here before. I deal with the bankrupt defendants. So I'm dealing with the asbestos bankruptcy trust or companies that are currently in the bankruptcy process that were currently being sued or previously being sued for the asbestos liabilities.
Interesting.
So I work on asbestos, but in a different light than my coworkers do.
Wait, so when a company is bankrupt and they're the defendant, and obviously you're trying to extract some money from them, and if you are new to the program, and you can go back and listen to some of the great segments we've done with Vogelzang about why it's so important with asbestos litigation, how these companies often knew about how dangerous this product was from the 30s and 40s, yet it still continued in operation and use for decades and decades. But if a company is bankrupt and they're the defendant, what is it about how to figure out how to get the money, or is it just add an extra layer in the litigation that makes things complicated?
So there's a couple different factors. So basically, there was a part of the bankruptcy code created to address companies going through bankruptcy after being sued so many times, specifically from asbestos litigation. This was like early 1990s. And this part of the code establishes personal injury trusts for those injured parties to go to for compensation instead of going to court. And then for, say, a company that we sue goes bankrupt tomorrow, they then go into, if they're going under Chapter 11 bankruptcy, I will have to follow that bankruptcy to make like what we call a proof of claim to try to get some compensation from that company as they're going through their reorganization. And then there's another type of bankruptcy, Chapter 7, which basically means that that company is going to be done after the end of the bankruptcy. So trying to, that's another proof of claim as well that you can try to do.
Boy, I'm glad you do that kind of work. I think some people are reluctant to sue, even if they're entitled to, because they're like, I'm not going to end up with any money. These companies are all bankrupt. I'm glad there's ways to still make sure that people are made as whole as possible through these civil litigation suits that you guys follow. Okay, so at Vogelzang, you guys tackle individual cases with people that have been dealt a bad diagnosis or passed on due to asbestos. The Depo Provera stuff, is this multi-district litigation? Is this class action? Talk us a little bit about that.
Yeah, of course. So the Depo Provera lawsuit, it is multi-district litigation right now. It is a mass tort that's across the country. Basically, like about October of last year, the first lawsuit arose alleging that the brain tumor injury came from Depo Provera. After that, numerous lawsuits were filed across the country. And then an MDL was created at the start of this year in January and February, specifically for these Depo Provera lawsuits. And a class, this multi-district litigation, which we call in short MDL sometimes, is different than a class action in that a class action, all individuals are grouped together into a single lawsuit. And then in a mass tort MDL, individuals still have their own lawsuit. So everybody still has their own case in this. It's just going to the same court, regardless of where you live in the country.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. We've had some other firms that do multi-district litigation, and there's nothing wrong with class action lawsuits. There's a time and a place for them, but multi-district litigation mm-hmm. still kind of gives everybody their own voice. Everyone may not end up in court, but certain cases do, and that could pave the way for law settlements. Maybe you do end up in court with your case, but it's a really whole interesting aspect of how MDL, mass it district is. Litigation, works.
And sometimes at the end of an MDL, what's created is like a settlement program that would be created to kind of go through basically what would be happening in court. So I'm not sure, it's too early to tell if that's what's going to be the case in this MDL, but that's what's happened in some other MDLs, such as like CPAP litigation, that there was a settlement program ultimately created.
Okay, so I jumped way to the middle of the story, and now I got to rewind back, and we got to go back to the beginning. Okay, what is Depo Provera?
Yes, so Depo Provera is a birth control shot that is typically taken every 3 months. While it's mainly used for contraceptive purposes, it also could be used for medical issues such as endometriosis. It was manufactured by Pfizer and has been available for women since 1992. And at that time, it was the only injectable contraceptive available for a while. Around 2004, Pfizer had authorized a generic to also be available on the market. So this birth control shot can either be the generic or the brand name.
And a lot of women use these, right?
Yes, it is a very common birth control option for women. I think that a lot of women, they will immediately know what it is when they hear it. I know people who have taken it. Most people that I talk to, they know people who have taken it. It's very common.
There are some known side effects that are advertised in the United States as with Depo Provera, correct?
Yes. So there are some known side effects that are that are listed on that list of warnings. And the issue in this case is that there have been Pfizer knew about these potential the plaintiffs in this are alleging that Pfizer knew about this warning of this brain tumor, but failed to adequately warn of the brain tumor despite being aware of this. And they failed to do that since 1992 when they made the generic available and continued not to update their warning list.
Yeah, so let's talk about let's talk about this brain tumor connection. What is this brain tumor? Is it what kind of connection are we talking about here? How did this evolve and become something that ended up now going to court?
Yeah, of course. So recent scientific studies have shown that the long-term usage of Depo-Provera can result in an increased risk of developing a brain tumor, specifically called meningioma. And so there's this like dose response link with meningioma development, that the more shots that you take, the higher risk there is of developing meningioma. But there's also evidence that you might only take the shot two times, and there's an increased risk of developing this brain tumor. So meningioma, it is a rare, slow-growing, benign brain tumor. So it's typically not diagnosed until that tumor has grown to an extent that causes pressure on the brain to create symptoms such as vision disruptions, seizures, memory issues, and migraines, just to name a few. So that meningioma, it is benign. So that basically means that it's not going to be spreading to other parts of the body, but it is still a brain tumor, and it's pretty significantly impacts these women's lives and has a lot of long-term consequences.
Let me just pause you right there, Sadie, for a second. I just want to make sure I understand. So they have shown that there is a link to the more you use Depo-Provera, the higher chance for getting these meningioma brain tumors, which are benign. So that's good news. I also just want to pause here to make sure we don't cause panic for people. It's not everybody, yes. Right? There's not a one-to-one correlation.
Yeah, so it's not going to be if you take it, you're going to get it. It's just like it's going to increase the likelihood of the presence of a meningioma. And I wouldn't say this shouldn't cause panic to anybody, but I would say you're not feel like if you have nonstop migraines, maybe get those checked out. It might not be anything, but just to go in and get it checked out if you do have those, but not to panic. I don't think there's any need to have like mass panic if you've had it before.
Okay. So as you were about to say, meningioma may be benign, but it causes things. Is migraines one of those symptoms that people have experienced?
Yes. So migraines is a very common symptom that I hear from almost all of our clients that we have right now. And another big one is seizures. It is a benign tumor, so it's not going to be going to other parts of your body, but there could be multiple of these. Also, it is on the brain. So one potential treatment is to do surgery, and typically the surgery is a craniotomy. So this isn't just a minor surgery. This is where in the surgery they remove part of the skull to access that tumor for removal. And so sometimes the tumor is also in a tricky part of the brain. So they're not able to remove all of it, or if they do, there's risk of hitting part of the brain that might lead to other side effects. So that surgery is pretty significant. If they don't do the surgery, sometimes they just monitor it for growth. There are some other treatment options available too.
Who should be calling you? We got to take a break here. We're going to talk more on the other side of the news, but is it people that maybe have taken this and have already experienced some symptoms, or are you wanting people who may have already been diagnosed with meningioma to call you guys at Vogel Zhang?
Yes. People who have already been diagnosed with meningioma should be calling, and if they've taken Depo-Provera. So typically a common issue that I've seen, people don't know the name of the brain tumor that they have. Medical terms are never easy to remember, especially meningioma. That's a fairly large word and complex word. If someone has a tumor, I would recommend to like look into the name of that tumor and then call, or even give us a call and so we can go through that back.
Okay.
And check that out.
We're going to talk more on the other side of the break of the news. Take some questions to VogelZhangLaw.com is a great place to get started with this. We'll continue this after this on WGN. Sadie Rose will continue our conversation here. She's from Vogel Zhang Law, talking not about asbestos stuff, which Vogel Zhang often comes on to chat about, But Depo-Provera, which is a birth control pill, or no, injection, excuse me, Sadie, and many women have taken it over the years, either that or the generic version, and there is a link to meningioma, a benign brain tumor that causes a lot of issues. And in fact, Sadie, we've had some texters text in wondering how long has Depo-Provera been used, because now they know friends that have meningioma and are wondering, well, how early did people start using it? Do you happen to know that, Sadie?
Yes, I do. So this MDL lawsuit, it goes back all the way to 1992. So anybody who's had an injection, at least two injections since 1992, they may be eligible, especially if they've developed meningioma.
So if you use it in like 1992, 93, two shots, and you have meningioma years later, give you guys a call to at least talk through it?
Yes. Absolutely. Those are exactly the individuals that qualify for filing into this court right now.
How long do they think that there is between the shots and developing meningioma? Is it decades? Is it years? Or does it vary?
Yeah. So that latency period, they're still working that out, trying to figure that out. That's what's going to be coming up a lot this year. One thing that makes it a little bit tricky about this case is that a meningioma is a slow-growing tumor. So typically, someone's not going to be coming in right when it appears on the brain. They might be coming in years after it first appeared, because it's starting to put pressure on other parts of the brain. So it's affecting the vision, starting to affect the migraines. So it might be there for a while before it's even symptomatic. There's definitely going to be some signs coming out, most likely this year, or in the course of this MDL about what that latency period looks like.
Is this pretty settled science that there is a correlation or a causation proven between these two?
Yeah, so there's a lot of the studies that have come out that show that the increased use of the Depo-Provera, what's specifically in there, is going to be increasing the likelihood for meningioma. I think it's times five.
Versus someone that doesn't use it at all.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Okay, so that latency period always makes things a little interesting and difficult sometimes for people.
Yeah, so that's definitely the issue. That's one of the unique factors about this this case is like that latency period isn't established quite yet. So like we'll be, I have some clients that might have taken it 2 years later, they were diagnosed. And then I have some clients that take it 20 years later, they were diagnosed. So that latency period is definitely going to be something that's different in this case, that it's not going to be always consistent.
I know that these cases against medications can be difficult because you have to show not that there's a link and that some people got harmed, but you have to go another step when you prove these cases, right? You have to show that the pharmaceutical company making Depo-Provera knew or should have known that there was a link. Am I wrong there?
No, that is correct. In this case, it's the science and the facts are pretty clear that the harms for meningioma were first made aware like in the early 1990s, and then in the 1970s it was even more established that the increased use of one of the hormones in the birth control shot does have an increased risk of meningioma. So one thing that's also interesting about this case is that, so Pfizer didn't give any kind of warnings in the U.S. or anywhere in the world for a while. Then they did give a warning of meningioma in Canada and Europe, but the United States still does not have this warning on the label.
Yeah, and that's the crux of this, right? Like, obviously there are medications that we take knowing the side effects, but the key is knowing the side effects. And that's the argument here, right? They just have not publicized this in the United States when ahead of taking the pills, or excuse me, getting the injections.
Mm-hmm. And so that means that also that like the medical professionals, they won't know that this is also going to be increasing the likelihood for this specific issue.
Okay. So what are the steps to filing a Depo-Provera lawsuit? Is it as simple as calling you guys, having a conversation?
Yeah, so that's the start of it. So basically, the main thing right now with this case is that MDL is really focused on that proof of injury, so the proof of being diagnosed with meningioma, and the proof of usage, so the proof of using Depo-Provera. The first part that's a little bit easier with getting just the medical record that does show the meningioma. The second part is a little bit more tricky, especially for women who've used it in the 1990s. And the court is aware of this issue, and they're trying to work on how we're going to establish this proof. So I would say that if anybody had, like, a meningioma, to start gathering their records, try to estimate the years that they used it, how frequently they did. To the best of their ability, that is a while ago, just trying to estimate it. Give us a call, and we'll try to get those records. We'll try to, and we're currently monitoring the court what they're going to decide with establishing this proof of usage.
And I assume that no one's paying money to you guys until they win a case, right?
Oh, no. Yeah. Everything. So we don't get paid unless you get paid. That's the whole thing with the plaintiff side.
Sure.
So we're it's just the you don't pay anything up front for us to work on the case.
So basically, it's as simple as, do you have meningioma? Have you been diagnosed? And if so, and you took Deborah Provera, call Vogelsang. Like, that's the equation here, right?
Yep. And then if you're unsure, but you have a brain tumor, you can always give us a call. We can work through trying to get those records to see if you have a meningioma.
Okay. Sadie, this was really important information. I imagine a lot of our listeners, and I can see them on the text line saying, oh my goodness, hadn't even heard of this. I'm glad you brought it to our attention, and I know you guys do great work at Vogelsang, and we appreciate your time this afternoon on WGN, okay?
Well, thank you so much for letting me talk. This is an important issue. And if I would just say one thing about all of this, I've spoken to numerous women who've had like migraines or other symptoms for years before being diagnosed with a brain tumor. And they're often dismissed from just their issues were dismissed. And so my general advice just for anybody, if your gut tells you something isn't right, keep being persistent, be your own medical advocate, and try to get to the bottom of it.
Amen. As someone who has a mom who suffered from migraines for years and was totally dismissed, told it was made up in her head and many other things, and ultimately getting at least the trigger figured out, it is so important to be your best advocate at the doctor's office and keep on pushing until you get the test done that you want to get done.
Agreed.
All right. Sadie Rose, love that. Love University of Wisconsin. Wait, what was the small town you grew up in Wisconsin before I let you go?
It's called Medford.
Medford. I never heard of that. We have a lot of Wisconsin listeners, so.
Yeah. Have you heard of Tombstone Pizza?
Yes.
By chance? It's the home of Tombstone Pizza. That's our claim to fame.
Oh, I like that. There you go. That's great. And the home of Sadie Rose. I'll just add that now. Of WGN Radio fame. Sadie, good luck with everything. Thank you. And shout out to everyone at Vogelsang, okay?
Thank you so much, and hope you have a great day.